having us this morning. I think we have a bit of problems in linking to the projector presentation. Everybody's got a copy, then maybe we can look through the copy while we're trying to sort out the technology. My name is Freddie. My name is Cornel, with me is Marongwa. She's a manager at the Department of Women. I've seen in the invite that there was expectation also to brief on CGE. In terms of our early review approach, we only focus on the department. So therefore, we didn't do any early reviews at CGE at this moment, so our presentation will be only on the department. It's also the audit hasn't really started there, so there's no review of this that we've identified at this page. So, if we can go to page 3, the purpose of this session is then really to brief the committee on the findings that we've seen during the early review of the 2018-19 ADB, and then also to highlight the risks that we've identified during our status of records review. We're doing the status of records review now. It's the first year that we started to speak, and it's really an early warning so that we can guide and warn the department to implement corrective actions where we see that there's potential risk that might impact the outcome of the audit. So then on page 4, that is just an outline to say when the committee is looking at the ATP, what is it that we would recommend from our side that the committee is looking at, and then we're going in to say what is it that we've looked at from an auditor's side. So getting the ATC, first of all, we're saying there should be alignment between the ATC and the NTSF. The indicator should be relevant and complete, so everything that is in the NTSF that is there as a primary responsibility should be included in the ATC. It should also be relevant in terms of the department's mandate and the functions that they need to execute. And then looking at the ATP, there should be a logic link between the objectives, indicators, and targets. Further down, going down to the specific target, it should be smart, so it should be a specific, measurable, realistic time bound. And then in terms of being able to execute it, considering what has been put in the ATP, there should be adequate resources, whether it's funding, whether it's human resources, whatever resources they might require to give execution to this plan that is being put forward. And that can only be done if the resources are there, but if the management has also a specific performance contract that will guide them to execute and to perform what is expected from them during the year. So what I'm saying is every year there should be an annual performance plan, and the annual performance plan of the DG and the senior management should be in such a way that it supports the execution of the ATP. And then going through during the year is quarterly monitoring, making sure that the achievements against the targets that we see, annual review, and then also to review and track changes to the strategic plan. I know historically the Department of Women specifically, there was quite a number of times where they've made in-year changes. This is now previous years. And also right at the end, there were some changes made to the ATP. This is not that evident this year, so it seems that the process is getting more mature and that there's more direction. So on slide 5, it is more in terms of what the AG is doing from our side when it comes to the early review of the ATP. So we will request the ATP, go through it, and our main focus will be on measurability and relevance. So we'll look and see whether it meets the SMART criteria and whether it's relevant, and therefore whether it's aligned with the mandate of the Department of Women. Understandably, at this stage, we can't look at the reliability because for that purpose we will need source documentation. And then in terms of the reporting, the findings that we've identified were communicated to management to give them the opportunity to correct. We will include it in our interim management report, and it was included in the interim management report to management. But the findings on the 18-19 ACP will not impact the audit report of 17-18, because we do this as a value add and as an early warning so that they meet the requirements going into 18-19. On page 6, we're saying the criteria that we use to assess the ACP, so we look at measurability and relevance. And the measurability, we will look whether the indicators is well defined, so it can't be grey and unambiguous. It must be clear in terms of what they want to achieve and how they're going to achieve it. Indicators are verifiable, so whether it's the calculation, the source documentation, but it should be clear on how they're going to achieve it and what should be in place for us to be able to measure it. And then targets must be specific, measurable and timed out. And the last one is, once again, in terms of relevance, we were saying it should be aligned with the mandate and the strategic goals of the department. On page 7, we just gave a high-level breakdown of the budget comparison between the 17-18 and 18-19. So we see overall that program 1, there's a slight increase. Program 2, there's a 12% increase. Program 3 is going up with 29%, and overall there's an increase of 12% for the department in terms of the budget year on year. If we do a breakdown in terms of the classification on page 8, we can see that 35% of the budget, the 234 million, is going to CGE as transfer payments. 63% is current expenditure and current payments, with a 2% budget for capital assets. And then if we look in terms of the split between current, the expenditure and employee costs, we see that 37% of the department's budget is going towards employee costs, which is fairly reasonable considering that they are people-driven and need to employ people to execute what they need to do. Then on page 9, we've identified programs 2 and 3 as the programs that we reviewed for the 18-19 ACP. Under measurability, we've identified findings, which we will highlight now. Under relevance, the alignment to the mandate, there was no findings, neither for program 2 nor for program 3. So if we go on page 10, and this is where we're going into a bit more detail of the findings, you can see that for the first indicator, the indicator detail was percentage of the development of the revised draft sanitary dignity framework. And the target is saying 75% revised draft framework for the sanitary dignity produced. So when you look at 75%, the question was, what is 75% of? What will 100% be and what will 75% be? The second one says percentage progress on the implementation plan for piloting the sanitary dignity to indigenous girls and women. And then the target says 80% development of the implementation plan. So there's inconsistency where the one is saying implementation and the target is actually saying 80% development of the plan. The first one is referring to approved women's financial inclusion framework, and once again the target is referring to develop. So if we look at these targets that we've identified, there was inconsistency, it wasn't always clear of what the base is going to be. We'd be saying 75%, but we don't know what 100% is. And therefore we also say concluded to say that these targets didn't meet the principles and the criteria for SMART. These were all communicated to the department and they have corrected these. So when they come to present the final ACP, it should be corrected now with clear indication of what they want to achieve and also sorting out the alignment to say that if we want to develop, the target is also going to talk to develop. Or if we want to say implementation, the target will also talk to implementation. Then on page 11, we're still on program 2. The fourth indicator, it says approved gender responsive planning and budgeting framework. And once again, the indicator is talking about approved, the target is talking about developed. So once again, there's the consistency of what the objective was and what the target is at the end of the day. And then indicated number 5, review GXP framework or gender mainstreaming. And then when we looked at the target, it's talking about GXP in government departments are correctly located. So what does correctly located mean? Where is it? It was also not indicated in the PID. And then HODs to comply with the accounting mechanism. And it wasn't clear to say which HODs. So subsequently it was identified that all HODs of all government departments should comply. But it wasn't clear and specific, it was also not indicated in the PID that it's all government departments. So we had the same comment and finding to say that it wasn't measurable, it's not clear, it wasn't accurate for us. When you come back to audit the actual results, it will not be easy to audit it, it will not be easy to report for them to report consistently and accurately because of these inconsistencies that is there between the indicators and the targets. Once again, this has been communicated to management and that indicated that they've corrected these. In program 2, so the indicator, this is on page 12, says report on implementation of presidential directive on women's economic empowerment in the 9-point plan to do. And then the target is referred to the Department of Trade and Industry. But when we looked at the TID, there was other departments as well. So once again, there was inconsistency in terms of who should be involved, who should play a part. Where in the one in the target, it's only the Department of Trade and Industry, but in the detailed documentation, they listed more. So these have also been subsequently amended by the department in the CIDs to provide more detail. Then on program 3, on page 13, it's the same to say approved framework on young women's socioeconomic empowerment, and the target is then also then referring to develop. So once again, on the one hand, they're talking about an approved document, and on the other hand, they're talking about on developing the framework. So we've identified this inconsistency. It has been communicated to the department. At the point when we concluded our review, this has not been corrected. So we're not sure as we sit here whether they've corrected this before the final submission and before final approval. So looking at the ACP, I think in terms of the process, they can still continue to put more effort in terms of their review, making sure that there's less misalignment, making use of internal audits, other structures within the department as they go through the review to make sure that indicators and targets are aligned, that it's specific, that it's clear, so that at the end of the day, the employees in the department are clear in terms of what is expected from them, what they should collect, what the source documentation should be. So when we come at the end of the year and we do the audit on the liabilities, that the consistent and complete evidence is available, and then it will be easy to confirm the actual achievement against the documentation. Then on the next slide, we did the status of records review on the third quarter. So that was just before December, October to December, that we reviewed the financial statements and the interim financial statements for that. This was a high-level review on what was provided and what we've identified at that stage being critical in the risky areas considering our knowledge of the department. So there's certain key focus areas that we focus on: oversight and monitoring, financial management, performance management, procurement, compliance, HR management and financial health. So in all the areas, we've assessed it as areas of concern for HR, financial, oversight and financial management, and then for intervention we've identified compliance, procurement and performance management. So as I say, this was based on the third quarter review, so they might have attended to some of these as we're sitting here. If we look at the specific findings on the performance management, the reason why it's red during the third quarter is we have an agreement and in terms of the timeline, the draft ACP should be submitted to us by the 31st of January. We've only received it middle of February when we received it. So at the time that we did the status of records review, we said, well, your documentation is not in line. So we're sitting now, I mean, it should probably be a yellow and not a red. Then we're looking at procurement and contract management. I think from where I'm sitting and historically, this is the area of big concern for the department, their ability to comply with supply chain requirements and procurement requirements. What we've identified during the first quarter is various deviations. So instead of following the process and the procedures as is being required, there is often deviation. The regulations allow deviation, but it shouldn't become the norm, it should be the exception. And when we looked at the reasons provided, it didn't really, wasn't really acceptable, because it referred to single source local service providers for 16 days of accessism launch. I mean, it's a known activity, it's something that happens every year. There shouldn't be that it's only one single source supplier. So I think there might be a bit of lack of planning, and then they're caught up in time, and then there's a process of going through for deviation. So we just said to the department, I mean, they need to be aware of it. They can't go for deviation. They need to plan properly for the known events that happens year on year. And even what is in the APP, even if it's not something that happens every year, if they put it in the APP, they should be in a position to plan for these activities. And as I say, year on year, irregular expenditure is quite high within the department. Then on consequence management, there was an investigation that was conducted by the Accountant General. The report was finalized end of August. There were some recommendations that came out of the report. From where we're sitting, we want to try and follow up to see what of the recommendations have been implemented, but it's not clear what has been implemented. They were also not forthcoming. I mean, when we talked to the CFO will say, no, it's not her responsibility, or it's not within her area. So they were, from where we're sitting, we don't know where the information is, if consequence management happens, if the recommendations have been implemented. And I suppose with the move in terms of the accounting officer, previous accounting officer leaving, acting accounting officer, and now a new accounting officer, the risk is that these actions might not be implemented because of the lack of continuity or follow-up. And then it's just confirmed by their inability to share with us at this stage what is happening. Then if we look at financial health, in 2015-16 there was unauthorized expenditure that was identified after they exceeded the approved budget. Until last year it wasn't reported to National Treasury. It was now reported to National Treasury for the first time in the year that we looked. So when we went in on the quarter three, they could provide evidence that this is now being reported to National Treasury and that there was engagement. But according to management at that stage, they haven't received any response or feedback from Treasury as yet. Then they have a debt and disallowance miscellaneous account. This account is also quite old, and it was as a result of, they didn't have policies that guided how they should write off if there's debt and staff debt. So they're sitting at this stage where a lot of these employees, where this debt was raised against, already left the department. And therefore, chances are that 1.4 and 1.7 million rand that sits in that disallowance account, they won't be able to collect, and they will eventually have to write off once the policies are in place. Then oversight and management. So historically, we had concerns about the control environment within the department, and we still have the sense that there's a lot of the recommendations that we've made based on our previous year's audit, the management report, that they still need to focus on and implement and monitor. And the last one is just in terms of the HR management. The CFO position was vacant for 9 months. So if we look at preparing accurate, reliable financial statements, it's critical to have a CFO in position, because, I mean, accurate financial records don't happen in 1 month or in the end of the year. It's something that happens continuously over the period. And all that we're raising as a concern is to say that with the absence of stability within that position, it's possible that things could have been, there's this oversight that there might be difficulty in preparing accurate and reliable financial statements. And we just want to urge the department then to say when they go in to submit and prepare financial statements now, they should take extra care to make sure that they go back, look at the previous year findings, look at what was raised during the interim audit, so that they make sure that the set of financial statements that is being presented are accurate and complete for audit purposes. Because in the event that we identify material corrections, it will then result in a non-compliance finding. So if they can prevent non-compliance findings, they should do everything possible to do that. Even if they need to get internal audits in to do a pre-review of the financial statements, just to assist them in terms of submitting and presenting accurate financial statements. That is it for my side. So if there's any questions, we're glad to take those.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for your presentation. It's really outlined quite well, very understandable. You mentioned that this is the first time that there hasn't been revisions or amendments made to the APT, but you refer to they made amendments based on your findings with regards to their targets and things like that. Our researchers also told us that instead of submitting a revised APT, they actually submitted a so-called correction directly to Parliament, which was actually a revision to the APT. I don't know whether you picked that up or whether, so if you could just clarify the consequences of that, because we know they do not plan, and we know that if they say they've done 75% or 80%, we can tell you they've done nothing. They have done nothing. They are lying, and so how, with in terms of the amendments and the targets, those are certainly concerns for us, because we've asked them. I mean, the last time that they were here was in, I think, February, maybe. They've been here once this year, once. They keep running away from us. And we gave them specific instructions to submit the documentation. I said, even if it's a paragraph that's on a page, they today have submitted absolutely nothing. They are, you say that 37% is reasonable for salaries that is person-driven, but in terms of targets and achievements, it's 0%. So if they were performing and delivering, that would be wonderful. So if you can just clarify and go into a bit more detail with regards to the revisions, amendments, corrections, and also a little bit more detail on when they say 80%, when they say 75%, don't hold back. Tell us exactly what you found. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, AG, for your presentation. I want to comment on the on page, it's page 9, because maybe starting from the beginning, to say the mandate of the department is very clear that they have to champion the advancement of women empowerment, social empowerment, and the promotion of gender equality. But when you look at their indicators, it's clear that one, they are dealing with the issue of sanitary dignity framework, and to your gender responsive budgeting and your financial inclusion framework. Those are the key things that every time, year in, year out. Actually, the sanitary challenge was included, I think, in the last year. But your gender responsive budgeting and your financial inclusion, since the inception, actually, of this department, they've been dealing with that. And they've not yet came to a conclusion to say these are the tools that we are going to use to monitor the other departments in terms of gender equality. So I think going forward, you're going to have a problem with the department, actually the existence of generally the department, because they don't implement its mandate. And I'm not quite sure what is the comment of the National Treasurer in this regard, because you can't just give out money every year without seeing, you know, the results of those money. So I'm having a problem. You know, I've been dealing with, you know, these departments for quite some time, and you can't each and every year talk about frameworks. It cannot be. There should be some way wherein there's a stop and you say this is the time to implement, you know. And my other comment is I want to agree with you and the Office of the AG to say yes, in that department there's lack of, you know, leadership, and you have been consistently saying that. There's lack of, you know, even people who can take the decisions actually at the top management, and there's no commitment generally in that department. And unfortunately, I think we have lacked a political will somewhere in that department, just to give a political direction, because I think we need that, because officials can take, you know, advantage of that to say there's a vacancy somewhere, or there's a vacuum somewhere, and we can take advantage of that. And the absence of not having a CFO for a year, I think it has contributed, because the person who was acting in that position does not have, you know, those expertise and, you know, what do you call them, those skills to run finances in that department. And he was acting both for corporate and for finance. Therefore, one way or the other, and we have been raising it as a department, as a personal committee. Unfortunately, we have not received any support. And also, the last thing, we had some investigations that were done prior to this one of the 31st of August. But just want to comment to say, how far are they? Do you have any information regarding those investigations? Because the ones that you are seeing now of the previous acting CFO, your Mrs. Sisulu, Singapi, and the rest, for your 15 days of activity. It's a recent thing. It's a new thing, actually. But we had several investigations that were conducted before, but we have never received any updates. Or people maybe being suspended. You know, this is everywhere. This one is everywhere. And I don't know how much of them, you know, they say misused or abused, or the deviations, how much have been caused. But we had several investigations previously. And as far as not yet received any comments. And well, my last point is on your page 7 in terms of your budget, your budget, your comparison between the current year, the budget of this current year and the previous years. I would wish that, because I know from your program 2 of social transformation and economic empowerment, you have included the allocation for CGE in this budget. That's why it's up. Yeah, but originally, what is the actual amount for the allocated to the department? Because someone who's saving this line, you have not given an indication to say this percentage goes to, in program 2 goes to CGE, and then the department is left with this percentage. Attention. The last one, Chair. I want your comment, AG, in terms of, you know, implementation for piloting sanitary dignity and the product. This department is not a service delivery department. It is not. So, we don't have a clear guideline on how are they going to pilot this. Do other departments have budget? Because they've already presented they don't have even a single cent to do that service. The National Treasury also confirms that other departments have not requested a money or budget for this service. So I'm trying to understand, yes, this is the indicator, someone has to be hold accountable for this, hold accountable for this indicator. But I don't know clearly how are they going to implement this, because they are not a service delivery department. At least it must appear in the APP of the Department of Education. Then I can agree with them, because it's an implementing.
I was saying, I was emphasizing the point that there must be a difference. It's not our job to deal with sanitary problems. There's a lot of work we should be dealing with as the department. Education department is rolling sanitary towels all over. So we posed the question at one stage, with whom are they in partnership? Over to you.
Sorry, it was just a follow-up question that I forgot to ask the first time round, and my honourable member brought it up, but you spoke about relevance, and that's exactly what we want to know. One of the essential things is, do the indicators, the KPAs, the programs that they've outlined actually meet their mandates? Because as outlined, because you haven't really touched on relevance. So that is very important for us to know as well. And like Tisharo said, we need, don't hold back, don't be nice, because this department has stuffed us around. And the reason why I'm telling you that they are lying is because when they were last here, we asked them, what have you done? And they said, in terms of the sanitary dignity framework, they submitted a memo to Cabinet, a memo. So what do you as the AG do when they lie?
The, on page,
Craig, sorry, I already given her. Bamboo.
Morning, honourable members, and Mr. Chairperson and the General. I want to say I fully agree with the honourable members when they say that this department is not doing what it's supposed to do. especially because we know that this department should monitor other departments on what they are doing on the issue of economic emancipation of women. And also to say that mostly their targets are not met. We have seen this several times, and we have asked the department that you have outlined your targets, but at the end of the term, you don't able to meet your target. And I also want to say that although this is a not an implementing department, but instead, as it is supposed to monitor other departments, this department has failed several times because there are no reports to say they have been able to monitor other departments. We haven't been given any report for which department they have been monitored and to say this is what we have been doing. And also, like for instance, on the issue of the former president, we said to them that they must make sure that they're looking at the issue of economic development of women. But they have failed even to report to us exactly what we are doing. Except to say most of the money that are being allocated to them is only being used for these dialogues. And even those dialogues, there are no reports that came to us to say these are the outcomes of those dialogues. That is why we are saying that we find it difficult to say that this department needs more money. Instead, the money should be given to the CGE, because the CGE are the ones now who are doing the job of this department. So that is why we are saying that we fully agree with what you have written here, with what you have reported to us, but you are always going to make sure that we ask questions, difficult questions from them, even though we will not get answers, because now this is going to be the end of the term for this department. Anyway, we have nothing that we can say this is the legacy that we have found from this department. Thank you very much, Chair.
I saw someone still saying the department has tabled. Oh yes, the draft APP for 2018-19 was submitted on 19 February for purpose of the review. I must confirm that they have not yet tabled it through Parliament or to you. Oh, you have it? Or the draft, but they have not yet tabled to Parliament. And what's your comment on that? See, we are supposed to have a meeting last week. They have cancelled because they have not yet presented. And even this week, they have not yet presented the table to the APT. And I must say, I think going forward, we are going to have some challenges of tracking some of the things, as you say, your investigations, you know, because there's a change of leadership there. And we don't know what is it that the new minister is coming up with in that department. So surely we are going to start afresh without even, you know, saying this is the achievement that we have from the previous leadership. So yeah, basically I wanted their comment. And one other issue that was raised by Honorable Bengu on page 12, the report on the implementation of the Presidential Directive on the Women's Economic Empowerment in the 9-point plan produced. The target said it was administered by DTI. I think this was a clear directive from the President. And if they understood it, it's very clear. So I'm just saying, it's unfortunate we are in this mess that we are now. And I'm not quite sure how we're going to turn things up going forward. Unfortunately, we are failing to the women of this country. That's the unfortunate part.
But we've been trying to get to the top of Kilimanjaro and falling down all the time. I just decided to use that phrase because I remember one time I was in hell. I lost my cool. And I lost it. But I said, you're taking us. It's taking us like this. And the DG, that was before she left. Shriner, before Shriner left. It was wet. I don't know. I don't wish anybody any bad thing, but we are demanding as this person. Because all of us are going to be swimming in that mud. We have to, because we have to answer unnecessarily when someone has done all the wrong things knowingly. And coming back to report six. It's about time. Put your foot down. We want the facts. People are being suspended left and right. And at some stage when I posed that question, Grace, you remember? Grace? You remember when I asked for clarity around the suspension of the people? This department? If we're pushing like that? It's unfortunate because we're not part of the net. And we've been shouting on top of the net. But then people have been. Thank you, Jay.
I also want to commend the Auditor General because we have received this report several times that the findings of this department have been reported to us by the Auditor General to say that they have been able to meet with the Minister to outline the findings that we have prepared the previous Minister. But the only thing that has been happening is that the changing of leadership, especially the personnel of the department, it has created so many problems within this department. Because the issue of this department being on the structure for so long, this has been a problem to us. Because we will be told that we will find that there is a DG. Maybe 2 or 3 months down the line, the DG has been changed out. You find another DG, you find an acting DG. All these people have been acting for so long. And even the CFO has been trying to make noise about the issue of the employment of the CFO. But you find that even the explanation from the minister former minister for the CFO, it's not been a good to us to say, no, 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 this CFO will do this and that and that. That is why it has taken so long. So that is why we have been having those acting CFO, those people who don't even able to take decisions within the department. So that is why we find out that there are these so many problems just because of that. Not that this portfolio committee has not made a noise in many, many issues that we have raised and findings in this report. But for us, it's that they were so clever that their reports are always clean reports. You know, so actually, at the end of the day, there are nothing that has been done by this department. That is always worrying us to say, no, the department is saying, oh, we have a clean report, but at the end, there's nothing that has been done to make sure that these women are being developed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just from my, if I look at involvement in the Department of Women and the presentation that we did now. So if I say historically, I'm referring 2016-17 and before that. My experience before that, that there was year on year, there was in-year changes to the APP. There was changes in March, right at the end. So at the end of the day, there was not achievement. Yeah, so they didn't achieve the targets that they set up. Money was all spent on the initial targets, but then it wasn't reported unnecessarily. And the new department was also always being put there to say, well, we're a new department, we're getting our understanding of our mandate alignment, and therefore they've always made the changes in their changes. I think a big thing that contributed to that, and is still contributing, is the lack of instability within the department. I mean, from CFO, different levels, your performance side, DG side, and now recently even on the minister side, although that's not that big of an impact, but from DG side and the levels underneath that, there was instability. There wasn't agreement in terms of what we want to do, where we want to go, how we're going to achieve it. And that just, unfortunately, in my view, resulted in the department even being able to achieve what they've set out. And that's why they're sitting still at this point in time saying we need to develop frameworks, because the framework was never developed. So looking at 17-18, so that's the year that we're currently in, we did the early review last year, as we did it now for 18-19. But as I'm sitting here, we haven't done work on the reliability. So we didn't go to the portal to say what you say you've achieved, match it to source documentation to see whether they've actually achieved it. That we will only do once we receive the annual report, where they say this is what we've achieved, and here's the source documentation to support what we've achieved. So at this stage, it's difficult to say if they say we've achieved 70% or this percentage, to say this is what they've actually achieved or this is the finding. Historically, there was problems in terms of what they submitted, and they had to go back and make adjustments. For the current year that we're in, I cannot say that is going to be the case this year. I cannot say whether they're going to achieve or is it going to be a repeat of the previous year, of at the end of the day saying we're only achieving 20% or 30% of what we've set out. Then the purpose of this specific presentation was then on 18-19, so it's looking forward in terms of the current year that we're in. We've received a draft in February to do this early review. In terms of the treasury regulations, they were supposed to submit it by the end of March. So that hasn't been done, and that will be reported as a non-compliance. So that will come into the report. I think what we've identified is in a glimpse to asking, well, is the implementation of sanitary dispensary policy, is that their role? And I think that is where we're coming from, to say there's inconsistencies in what they say, because on the one hand they say we need to implement, on the other hand they say we need to develop. And that is what the department needs to clarify and come out to say, what is their role? I mean, they can't be inconsistent different in what they have in the indicators. And if the indicator is saying implementation and that is not their mandate, then it should be from the start. We should monitor, we should have tools in place, we should see how the identified departments are functioning. That should be their role then. But I think that is the type of questions that we go to the department and say, how did you fix this misalignment between indicator and target, and what tools are in place? On the one slide when I started off in slide 4, there was some questions that I said the committee can also ask. And one of it is, how can the APT be achieved? So one of the examples is performance agreements, but it's also feedback mechanisms to the committee to say, if you say you're going to achieve 70% of a plan, tell us how you're going to achieve it, what tools are going to be in place, because there should be quarterly reporting on that. And how is that feedback coming back to the portfolio committee? How is the department monitoring that? Is that in the performance contract of the accounting officer, of the DTG or the senior person that is responsible for the monitoring of that? Is that in the performance contract so that an individual can be held accountable to drive and deliver on something that has been approved in the APB? So that is the next step then that I would recommend to say, how is the department going to make sure that they achieve what they set out? And how are they going to be held accountable? And how can the committee hold them accountable? And against what can the committee hold them accountable? At the end of the day, our responsibility is going to be to see, yes, you've got an approved APB. If you report on actual achievements, we're going to monitor and evaluate the source documentation. If the source documentation supports 10%, I mean, we're going to say 10% is what you've achieved. But it's not going to result in a qualification, or we're not going to say that the department didn't achieve what they were set out. Our responsibility is to verify the accuracy of the information that they, at the end of the day, give to the public out there. But based on our previous, I mean, at the end of the day, for the 10% or 70% of what, we could get evidence for that. In terms of the audit process, we audit the source documentation. If it's materially misstated, they can go back to correct it. It's not the same like with the financial statements where there's a material correction that's non-compliant. So they can correct it without it resulting in a non-compliance at the end of the day. Requirement at this stage that specifically says that if there's material misstatement, that it then will result in a non-compliance. I spoke about the lack of leadership. I think that is really what is driving the current situation. Prior investigation, I know there was a previous investigation, I think on the travel agency, I'm not sure about the others. I haven't received formal final feedback. I don't know, being closer to the team. And that's what I said in the beginning. So even the previous investigation, as I've reported back in terms of the current investigation, it's not that openness and transparency to say, well, this is now the outcome, this is the recommendations, this is how we're going to implement, this is the controls we're going to address. So, and it becomes very difficult to monitor what they're supposed to do and if they're not willing to share. But once again, I can't see why they shouldn't and why they can't share with the committee. And they should also share with us. And I link it back to the leadership and the instability there to say, a person might have the intention to start sharing, to deal with it, and then there's a new person and then the process needs to start all over again. So the sooner that we can get to a situation where there's stability in terms of the leadership to the bottom, I think the better to move forward in terms of them being able to achieve what they need to achieve. The budget, I think if we look at program 2, excluding CGE, it's 16 million that is remaining. Out of the, if I can just get that page. So 107 million currently budgeted, And then if we take out what is going to CCD, there's a remaining of 16 million that remains for them to execute the mandate. 16. Targets not being met, I think most of the comments from where I'm sitting, I can just agree to say I agree. I mean, at the end of the day, they're not in a position to meet their targets. They disclosed last year and the year before that they don't achieve their targets. Reports, dialogue, I mean, we're having the same challenges in terms of getting the information. And then I spoke to the 19th February to say that that would result in a non-compliance. Because they haven't submitted the title of the APG.
Can I
call
another question to you? We are having a new minister. And the problems discussed in this. Looking around and saying at the end of the day, the portfolio committee integrity, and this is not because of their own making, but because we've been shouting like mad dogs. Is there a way then of summoning the tax minister to actually answer to these things, and the time frame is a week? We can't go on like this. And there are extra people who have been suspended. Think about it. Think about it and drop out the line. But clarity is crucial, yeah.
Maybe a week.
On time, it's a non-compliance, but there will be a non-compliance finding in the audit report. So from our side, we can report on what they didn't do compared to what they were supposed to do.
Thank you.
the CEO, and also we have our CFO, and we also have our intern. I also wanted
she's visiting the gender commission just for experiment. So I gave her a title. I know, Mama. I always see young people myself, and when I look at them, I'm like, you are not supposed to be working, but I remember that that's the time we all started to work around 2021. But they look young because we're getting older. Thank you very much, Mama. Hello. Yes, honorable members, we do have the amalgamation discussion, Mama Memela, as you have said. We have made our clear submission. But what I'm also cautioning the honorable members is that there is a different stream of this discussion of amalgamation. There is a Kata Asmal amalgamation, which we were expected to respond to. And then when we are in the meeting, we find out, no, there is another discussion on a single human rights body. So what they are doing, they are conflating them intentionally, and we don't know why. So there is a Kata Asmal report that a gender commission was responding to. And then there is a proposal for a single human rights body. And we were told it's a parliamentary a decision to have one single human rights board. So the gender commission got to speak. And we said to them, if parliament has a resolution on a single human rights body, we would like to see that. So what is happening, the chapter 9s are in and out of CADA, and they are also in and out of a single human rights body. So it's a bit of a conflated discussion. But the Gender Commission is against Kata Asma's resolution on the Gender Commission. What we have said, we are going to give it back to the veterans. You are the ones who established the Gender Commission. You are the ones who are going to close it. But from our sense is that you will never get those powers that the Gender Commission has again, not under patriarchy. So you can talk about the funds, you can talk about the finances, but you would never have powers to reverse the impact of patriarchy. Departments don't have it. So a chapter 9 gets in, if it's a young marriage, chapter 9 gets in and tells this man, let this child goes back home. There's no department that has those powers. But the chapter 9 gender commission has that power. And that's how you conceptualized it. But I must also caution that we are told no, it's because the commissioners have termed that we said it's not about us. This session of commissioners have disagreed on the amalgamation. Another thing, if you look at the public protector, you will see there are 96 million under red, but 30 million. Human rights is in the red, they are overspending their money. So if you take the Gender Commission with this budget there, what is going to happen to the 80 million? Yes. So it's a trick question for us. There are no risk assessment of how you amalgamate. There is no assessment on how the Chapter 9s are going to report even to Parliament financially, because there are different financial dispensations, and we heard that Parliament is also not ready for that. So there's so much that is not ready, but politically things people are ready, but it's going to be a problem in implementation.
Honourable members, that is where we are, Mama, and I think that we appreciate the spirit, because what we have found out was that we, in fact, we were singled out as the problem child, and we were supposed to be dealt with. The committee was clear, we need to be dealt with. The Kada Asma committee that has been mandated by Parliament. Parliament have a committee that is looking at amalgamation, a task team. That task team is that one that is driving on behalf of, they call it the presiding officer. The presiding officer from the office. So they are driving. I don't know, we will come and discuss about it, but I also hear you, Honorable Ma. There's one thing that I want to tell you. It is a fast-moving train. And even ourselves, when we, this last time, they said, it's either you are in gender commission or you are out, and we said we are out, register us that we are not getting in. And then they said, okay, we will go straight and report to the presiding officer why our reasons are not the same. So there is that discussion. It's not genuine. Thank you very much.
No, Chairperson, I was saying because of time, constraint, let's deal with the APP and fully agree with honourable members when they say that they should invite the tax team to come to us.
Okay.
so that we can discuss this.
Can we close that?
Yes, can we close?
I will give over to the CEO to present our 5-year strategic plan. Just to also say, Honorable Chair, that we were all now, all the commissioners, we have a full panel. So we were all part of the workshop and discussed the strategy. So this is what we have adopted as a collective.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. The presentation was tabled, so we will just run through the work, hoping to leave much more time for engagement on what has been tabled. If you look into the slide presentation that is before you, we will quickly just highlight our vision and mission that hasn't changed, our mandate, some of the strategic objectives, and we'll highlight some of the changes that have been made. We'll just indicate some of the principles that forever underpin the direction that we take as an institution, and highlight some of the programs and the work that we'll be doing. If members look, we have had to go through a new process altogether, seeing that our strategic plan ended on the 31st of March this year. And so we have started the process where we were looking into the full 5-year strategy and obviously the APC for this new financial year. We haven't changed our mission. We still feel that our mission is still relevant, society free from all forms of gender oppression and inequality. Our mission is still to ensure that we promote, protect, monitor, and evaluate gender equality through research, public education, policy development, legislative initiatives, and of course, litigation where we can. This time around, we have also uplifted our values a little high. And part of why we have done that is because the way that we are going to be doing work now is going to be a little bit different. As members are aware, we are under tremendous budgetary constraints. And on that basis, we have shifted the manner in which we are going to be doing work. We want to have more teamwork and have that particular integration that we've been talking about. And so we have highlighted a little bit and put it up. And also it has now been included in our new performance arguments, teamwork, issues around teamwork, professionalism and ethical behavior and all that. So we have uplifted that, and those are the values that we will be looking into and ensuring that as we do the work, everyone within the institution adheres to those particular values. We need them as we do our work every day. We went back, we looked into our mandate as proposed by Commission for Gender Equality Act 39 of 1996 as amended in 2013, and we went back to really check to say what are the kind of things that the Act is clear to say we must do, and there are things in there that we may do, and therefore we really went back to look into those specific things. And I'm not going to be really looking into that thing, except to highlight that there is one leg of our mandate that we have not really worked hard on, and that's the one that talks about us proposing new legislation that impacts gender equality and the status of women. So what we have done all along is to go through bills that come to the Parliament and look at them from a gender lens, but we have never ourselves come back and propose new legislation. So it's one of the things in the mandate that we are going to be assisting in this new strategy going forward. So we still obviously going to look into developing and conducting or managing educational strategies and programs that foster understanding about gender equality as a whole, and specifically the role of the Commission. Of course, we are mandated to investigate and resolve conflicts on gender matters, and we are still going to be working on that and ensuring that now we have much more reports that highlight, you know, that role in terms of
what we have done, how we have mediated, if we mediated or negotiated some of the matters that come before us, and obviously if ever we need to go and mediate, then we'll do as such and have recourse to that extent. And obviously the most important one, especially looking at the budgetary constraints, is always the fact that we must liaise and interact with institutions that have similar objectives as the Commission for Gender Equality in order to promote gender and throughout the sector in the country. Obviously, we prepare and submit reports to this Parliament, and as well, in this particular aspect as well, we are now, you will see when we take you through the actual APP, you will see that we are trying to also ensure that all the activities that we undertake have a theme of sorts so that we can be able to produce a substantive report on each of the issues that we work with. So we will have substantive reports that will have obviously an element of what we have researched, obviously an element of some of the complaints that we have dealt with, and so it goes. And hopefully that will then also give this particular committee much more insight as they do their oversight work throughout the year. And obviously we've taken into account that as a commission we may conduct research. So it's not a must for us to conduct research, it's a may as far as the Act is concerned. But we have taken into account the fact that this is also the work that we have been doing so well, and there are quite a number of, you know, impactful processes that have come out of this. And so we will still be doing that, but it's not going to be a lot of research that we'll be looking into. And we'll be looking into uplifting some of the things that we have done previously and seeing how we further try and influence policy on them. And obviously there are a few other things that we should still continue in terms of the research work and the things that we have highlighted. So that will also take it will take off importance, or we will be giving a weight into that. I think it's going to be important that in implementing this particular direction that we clearly articulate how the institution sees itself in being able to deliver on this very broad mandate. We know that there has been a debate about whether our mandate is simply too broad for us to be able to fulfill, or whether its wide scope provides sufficient space for us to be able to combat gender discrimination. And therefore, as we were engaging and looking into the mandate, these were the kind of things that we were engaging on, just to see and ensure that we come up with a better document. When you look at the strategic objectives, the change that we have done now is we have now going to have more focused three strategic objectives. Previously, we had four strategic objectives. And how we have done that is actually to realize that the work that we were doing under strategic objective three, which looks into international instruments, is work that actually fits very well and properly into the legislative environment. And so, it makes sense to ensure that we take the previous strategic objective one and the previous strategic objective three, and we bring it together in order to ensure that it gives us much more substance rather than when they are separated. And therefore, in this new strategy, we have three strategic objectives: enabling legislative framework, promote and protect gender equality, objective. And we still have our own inward-looking strategic objectives that will assist us to ensure that we deal with the two, build and sustain efficient organization. I think when you look even in terms of the current climate, as far as budgets are concerned, everyone is really pushed to have a much more focused process, and that's exactly what we, as well as the Commission, have aligned ourselves to. Under strategic objective one, which is going to assist us to advance an enabling legislative environment for gender equality, that's where we will then look into monitoring compliance with international and regional treaties and conventions, but as well still be able to evaluate existing
but also recommend new legislation, which is one of the new things that we're going to be looking into, and obviously assist us in investigating, monitoring, and evaluating organs of state and private sector as far as gender equality is concerned. And strategic objective two, the promote respect for and protection, development, and attainment for gender equality strategic objective. This is where we are going to much more vigorously look into developing and conducting and managing public education and information programs, investigating and resolving some of the disputes on gender discrimination issues and coming up with a specific redress, and obviously liaising and interacting with like-minded institutions when we do this particular work in order to ensure that we broaden our reach. Under strategic objective three, which is build, sustain an efficient organization and effectively promoting gender equality, this is where we'll be focusing much more on our governance structure issues, focusing on coordination mechanisms. As we indicated, we are going to be working in a much more integrated fashion. Human resources management and development is going to be of importance to us, and obviously we still have specific obligations and responsibilities as far as financial management is concerned, risk management and the like. So that is going to still be core of the sub-strategies that we'll be looking into as far as that strategic objective is concerned. And as well, information communication technologies is of importance, and knowledge management. We are really hoping that by the end of this particular year, the 5 year, we will be an excellent institution that is able to run. Everybody must look upon us when they think of gender equality, and so that's what we are striving for. And obviously, we have added also a nuance there around corporate communication as something that will also ensure and assist us as far as reach is concerned on the web. In coming up with this strategic objective, I think when you look at it just from a perspective of just looking at it upfront, one would look like it's just the same. But in actual fact, when we look at it, it does show that it's no longer business as usual as far as the work that we'll be going to be doing is concerned. Obviously, when we were undertaking the 20-year review, we did indicate to this particular committee that we wanted a review that is done by an objective and independent institution that would have spoken to quite a number of people within the sector, so that we can then take into account some of the issues that are coming out of there. And that's exactly what we have done. And so one of the things that has been highlighted is the fact that as a commission, we must have much more focus, and obviously the implication that we are not necessarily an implementer, but we must be able to play a catalyst a model or role rather than an implementer role. And when we do that catalyst, if we do it in a much more focused and proper way, then there will be much more results that can come up with. The fact that we should be able to establish strategic partnerships much more, that will assist us in ensuring that we deliver on the programs, and that we must have much more proactive and independent stances on some of the required issues that we work within. And so all those issues are issues that we looked into and thought about as we're coming up with this new strategy. The fact that we are a catalyst means that we must be an institution that causes something to happen. We must be a precipitator of a particular activity. And so because of that, there is a fundamental shift in approach that we are going to be doing in order to ensure that we are that catalyst institution as is expected of us. And obviously, this takes into account account, and it resonates with the fact that we are an organization of hundreds or even fewer as far as implementation is concerned. When you look at our budget, we are sitting at 78 million, which certainly is not going to be increased in this new financial year. So basically, we are moving with the baseline from last financial year into now. And it recognizes the fact that we are not an NGO as an institution, and there must be a primary function that we do as an independent Chapter 9 institution that supports this democracy. And so I won't go through some of the comments because we've just highlighted some of the comments that are there that we took into account as we were having these deliberations in order for us to come up with a document that is a fuller document that is before this parliament as far as our strategy is concerned. And if you look at slide 14, obviously if you look at some of those comments and some of the work that we've put, it really forces us to have that shift in activity as far as the APP is concerned. Being the central provider of key information, educational material, legal opinion and research, and being able to establish or leveraging on some of the partnerships and collaborations with other institutions. And one of the things that we have highlighted, which we think is going to be important, and that's one of the big projects that we're going to be running with, is the fact that if we have, as a country, a proper running national gender machinery, then we will actually be able to seriously see our role working as far as that catalyst process or model is concerned. So it's one of the things that we put up high on our agenda to say we are going to take it upon ourselves as an institution to ensure that we push the NGM and perhaps even come up under new legislation that has been highlighted, that we should be looking into the current gender policy framework and see whether it can be reviewed, come up with new things, and hopefully even put it together as one of the new legislations that will come and sell in this particular parliament, in order to ensure that we don't find ourselves in a situation where leadership changes, anybody just decides that they won't take or look into the policy because it's just a policy and not necessarily a legislated a process. So that's one of the things that we will be looking into. And obviously providing information directly to the public, and of course we'll still be utilizing electronic means, and of importance we are still going to put much more effort into the radio programs that we've had, and ensuring that we also look into other digital methodologies that are there, whether it's things like webinars and all that, we'll then also put much more effort into those. And so this shift mitigates the risk of CDE not being able to fulfill its mandate. So what we have put together, that shift is actually going to ensure that we still are able to fulfill our mandate as is expected in terms of the law, but we are doing it in a much more heightened and a much more focused way, and ensure that we stimulate other stakeholders as well to ensure that we revive the function of the NGM. When you look into the APP, we have looked into we have highlighted two upfront themes that every other work that we'll be undertaking should be feeding into. And we're looking at women's health in general, and we're also looking into the gender policy framework, as I've indicated, because the idea there is to ensure that we stimulate the national gender machinery. And if we do that and there's work that starts to be done, there will be a ripple effect as far as gender equality is concerned from that perspective. We'll extend our reach through liaising and interacting with like-minded organizations. I've spoken already about electronic and media communication technologies and our radio approach that we also feel that we must heighten it much, much more. and give attention to our knowledge management system to ensure easy access of the material and the work that we do as an institution. And here, honourable members, I'm here, we boldly put this particular effect into our APP, and we hope that this committee will actually assist us, because one of the things that we want to do is to be able to proactively engage Parliament to strengthen policy and legislation that advances gender equality. As we have indicated, we've never really started new legislation, and as we do that work, we are going to rely into this committee that when we request meetings upfront on some of the work, that we actually get given space to be able to engage. So our engagement, we're hoping, will be much more substantive, and we will not wait upon the usual calendars where it's the four quarters that we report on, and the annual report and the strategy, which will be like six times as far as the legislative or PFNA is concerned. But we would want to have much more engagement on the substantive work, and with the hope that we will then also give this particular committee and equip it to also play its oversight role much more proactively and better. Legislative framework that still informs the work that we are doing, Beijing Platform for Action, is always the basis for implementing gender mainstreaming, and therefore we are still working and utilizing it. CEDAW, gender equality and elimination of all forms of discrimination. Many a times within the sector, people call it a bill of rights for women, and it's important for the work that we do. And of course, we have sustainable development goals and goal 5 specifically, and because we also want to zoom into the area of health, we've also outlined that we will look into goal 3, which looks into health. And when we look at AU Agenda 2063, looking at some of the goals that are there, it's been put in place to catalyze development and strengthen African integration and unity, but we are going to be looking into the goals that lead or speak to health as well. I think it's important. There are quite a number of shifts and quite a number of things that are happening within the health area. And when you look at the health area, it actually gives us a sense of all the other issues that you can work with. You know, when you're looking at health, when you look into legislation, for instance, when you look at legislation that inhibits some of access to health, that's where we will still be looking into issues around sex work. When you look at some of the legislation that is in place that is assistive as far as access to health is concerned, gender-based violence also features. When you look into health and look into the fact that as a country we don't only run our legislative framework is not only running on legislation, but we also have customs that are also running. We know that there are specific things that are coming as far as our custom is concerned. There are issues around underage marriages that come out from our customary processes, and those things affect women's health and all that. So that I'm just trying to show how holistic this whole thing will be, in as much as we are looking at specific projects, just to give members a sense. And even when you look at goal 5, as far as gender equality and empowerment of all women and girls is concerned, we are looking there at eliminating all forms of gender-based violence against women and girls, eliminating all harmful practices such as child early and forced marriages and female genital mutilation. Those are specific goals or targets that are in the SDGs. And ensuring women's full and effective participation and equal opportunities for leadership at all levels of decision-making, political, economic, and public life. So when you look at all those, you can see already how this area this goal that we are uplifting is going to be assisting in ensuring that we look into these things and come up with substantive reports that will assist this Parliament. Ensuring universal access to sexual and reproductive health and reproductive rights, undertaking reforms to give women equal rights to economic resources,
and adopting and strengthening and sound policies and enforceable legislation for promotion of gender equality and the empowerment of all women and girls at all levels. So those are really the goals out of what is contained in goal 5, some of the targets and some of the issues that we are going to be looking into and coming up with specific reports as far as that work is concerned. And so slide 20, you will see that we have tried to just highlight activities that are contained in the current APP and the programs that we'll be looking into and the programs that right at the end will be able to then feed into those particular themes of health and GPS that we are looking at. So if you look at CEDAW, there are quite a number of general recommendations that have been in place. General recommendation on violence against women and general recommendation on women and health. And so we are going to zoom into that and see what is it that we have done as a country and be able to report accordingly. SDGs have already highlighted, and we will be looking into the African Charter as well. We take into cognizance the fact that we can't always just look into international instruments. There are regional instruments that are also important part of the region, and we will be looking into that and the AU health goal, as I've indicated. We will still be working within the traditional sector. Obviously, we've highlighted that we as a country have those two legal frameworks that are running, and therefore it's still going to be important that we look into gender mainstreaming through the houses of traditional leaders. We're looking into issues around forced and early marriages. And this has been precipitated by the work that as we were working in the previous financial year, we have seen some elements, we have reported, as we were reporting in some of the previous quarters before this committee, the fact that there was that worry of this kind of forced and early childhood marriages coming up in the Eastern Cape, and there's a bit of work that we had already done, so we are going to zoom there and ensure that we have a specific report that hopefully will also give a sense of what are the kind of things that we need to do to ensure that we fight this particular problem. And that on its own is actually going to assist us as well as a commission to say what are the kind of outreach processes we must also be heightening and looking into and pushing for as far as this is concerned. Because part of what we have surfaced as we were doing the work, and we are hoping that this deep-steep kind of research that we'll do will also lift up those things, is the fact that when there are engagements with some of the parents in some of these rural areas, one of the things that they highlight is the fact that we end up getting our child or kids to get married at an early age, because at the point when they start menstruating and at the point where you already see them standing with boys, you would rather get them married rather than getting a fatherless child into the house. And that already indicates to us that there might be something that we do as a country as far as sexual and reproductive education is concerned. And so that those are the, hopefully the things that we'll be able to come up with so that we are able to have specific outreach and educational programs that will assist, because obviously getting a child married at a young age does not necessarily assist or take away or attack the root cause of what the problem is as far as this is concerned. Maternal health, we still have that particular investigation that we are working on, and we are still going to continue working on that. Sex work, we still have a lot of work that needs to be done. We know that the paper is out, and so there's work that still needs to be done as far as that is concerned. Women in correctional services, also focusing on health, we are still going to do that. Shelters, as we did the work in the previous financial year, there are quite a number of problems and issues that are coming out, and it's also a health perspective on shelters, and therefore we're going to be doing hearings on shelters. We'll call social development, we'll call some of the NGOs that are doing this shelter work. There's someone somewhere that is dropping the ball, and we need to be able to make all these things come
back and see what else needs to be done as far as that work is concerned. And transformation in universities, we're still going to continue to do that. In our report, the judicial transformation in the judiciary report, there are specific recommendations, and therefore we can't just leave it hanging. We're still going to go back and engage with all the various stakeholders as far as those resolutions are concerned to ensure that we get somewhere. And we are now also going to be looking on women in procurement. And so we will be doing hearings as well, just to see at some point we've had National Treasury and everybody else highlighting that the specific money that is supposed to be ring-fenced for women as some sort of empowerment and all that. So we are going to now zoom into this, you know, financial area to just see how are we doing, what is it that we are doing, are we really following some of the policies that we have in place that are supposedly in place to ensure that there is women empowerment. So we'll be looking into those. And of course, we still have other programs that we deal with around submissions. I've highlighted new legislation, so I will not get into that. In the last financial year, there are specific reports that we have just finalized. We're still going to continue to have those policy dialogues with policymakers to see how some of those recommendations can still be taken forward as far as the work is concerned. And we're taking into account, as members would know, every year when there's going to be elections, we come and we observe and we look at what, you know, everything from a gender perspective. We rally around, we run around, we engage all political parties, reminding them of the fact that as they do their work, as they do their lists, as they do whatever that they do as political parties, gender equality is always important and must be at the center of what they do. So we are going to start now doing our preparations as far as national elections is concerned. Of course, we have our legal and outreach clinics. We are still going to carry on with that particular work, zooming into various areas and assisting where we can as far as some of the complaints are concerned on that, and obviously handling of complaints. And we have PI programs that we are going to be to still be running with. We have teams that we run with throughout the year, observing all the national teams that are there. And we still have media campaigns. All the media campaigns and the media work is also going to be stemmed and grounded on what is in the ACP and assisting and ensuring that our media actually opens up and assists or drives some of the work that we will be undertaking. And of course, organizational competency is one thing that we've also uplifted, and this is part of the fact that when you look at how we are now approaching the work, we are approaching it in such a way that we are going to be working in teams, we are going to be working in a more integrated fashion instead of the silos, and therefore it's going to be important that we zoom into performance and some of our behaviors and ensure that we live what is espoused as far as our values are concerned, and we have uplifted out of the five that we have, teamwork and professionalism, to zoom into that. And that chairperson sums up the work that we will be undertaking as the commission, having highlighted some of the programs that we'll look at in this year. And of course, we still have our oversight committees intact and in place. These are committees that are led by commissioners that are actually able to assist us in ensuring that some of the targets and some of the work that the Secretariat is going to be doing, we are able to play oversight and check and ensure that we reach the targets as expected. Thank you, Chair.
The presentation has also been executed, is comprised of 15 slides. Effectively, this presentation represents the funding of the strategic plan projects and programs that were presented in the latter presentation. As we know as well, the funding of programs is regulated, firstly regulated from the perspective of the Constitution. If you go to the slide number 4, basically taking cue from the Constitution under chapter 13, where principles espoused include open and accountable use of financial resources, state resources. The PFMA also, you know, have got quite a number of regulations pertaining to the appropriation and use of public funds, so we'll be drawing responsibilities out of the PFMA. But further within our regulatory environment, we know if you look at slide number 5, there's a framework that guides how strategic plans needs to be compiled and managed over their subsistence. So effectively drawing your attention to the first bullet, there's a legislated requirement or a regulated requirement to the effect that long-term plans, including even short-term plans, have got to be sequenced. The earlier presentation has indicated the projects and how they are sequenced and then how they integrate into particular programs. And then the essence of this presentation is the latter part of that particular statement to say associated resource implications needs to be taken care of. And this also builds an alliance with our standard budget planning, MTF process, medium-term expenditure framework. So we have aligned this particular financial planning to the broader public sector approach to budgeting. Coming to look into the assumptions, internal assumptions, when we were complying with, as we are complying, matching resources to the plans, we were faced there with a number of things, realities. First reality is that we are exposed to inflation. We are also, as an institution, exposed to the effect of the increase in VAT, 1% increase, but as well, one of our realities is that we employ officials who are remunerated, and remuneration is also subject to annual increases. So we have factored in estimated an increase of up to 6% per annum. And we planned on the basis of the projects and the programs that we want to do, the activities that have been outlined in the presentation. But in addition, we have also considered or learned from our past history. So our budgeting basically took into account quite a number of particular assumptions. And some of the assumptions come from history, but by and large, we were doing what's called zero basis of budgeting. Clean approach. And what the committee also know is the fact that we have a particular budget which has got a particular structure. We know historically that our budget naturally so is comprised of 80% COE, but it is because we are mainly utilizing internal resources, our staff members to do the core work. So those are basically the particular parameters listed on slide 6. And what also we put forward for the committee to note, which we have reported previously, was the fact that due to the fiscal conditions, the economic conditions, I think the state is really having difficult to collect revenues. And then as a result thereof, if you look into point number 2 on slide 7, we'll know that there has been a budgetary reduction for the up-and-coming financial year 2018-2019 and also projected to continue into the outer years of the MTF period. So the result of it was that we had received 2.1 million less than what we could have received at the minimum should the conditions have been different. So the actual increase in the baseline was 2.5 million, which we are calculating that would not be enough to cater for price pressures. There's inflation that impacts our baseline. On that note, if you look into the slide 8, we will see that this slide basically demonstrates over time how the CGE baseline has been eroded. And eroded by the effects of inflation, eroded by budgetary reductions. Just to go through the graph, the red line that goes up is basically a nominal allocation. So over time there's been increases. And then the green line is a discounted line. That is, we have assumed constant prices. We have assumed that in the absence of inflation, the green line shows a pattern as to what happened to the baseline, CGE baseline in real terms. So the gap between the two lines indicates the erosion. So in actual fact, when we look into how over the years National Treasury has allocated money to the CGE, we see that in real terms there were no increases, but instead the CGE had to stretch the rent. So the allocation has not in effect increased. What we are basically seeing is just inflation adjustment, and even worse with budgetary reductions. Slide number 9, tabulating, analyzing the budget, and the best demonstration of the funds available to execute the long-term plan, the best period to look at is the up-and-coming financial year, because we in this resourcing of the long-term strategic plan, we basically have to assume as well that we will operate year on year on the same basis as we will be operating in 2018-2019. So we are using 2018-19 to demonstrate, and also 2018-19 to ask for appropriation to execute the plan that was outlined by the CEO. So when we look into this budget, we see that the overall amount allocated is 80.7 million, of which 57.2 million is on compensation of employees. I will outline further, break it down further to justify it to the committee, and then the remaining 23.5 million of the overall annual budget was for goods and services. When we analyze this budget deeper, we'll see that the goods and services accounts for 29% and COE 71%. And drilling down into the COE, we can report to the committee that although the percentage is relatively higher, the COE represent 80% of it represents remuneration for conducting what the CGE Act requires. It's basically to roll out our core legislative obligations. So the commissioner program is derived from the CGE, and the commissioner responsibilities are fully outlined in there. And when as well one looks into the CGE mandate under Section 11 of the CGE Act, that is where we will be spending the 80% of COE on. So there's a good case basically to say that we're spending the money on the core work. We are not outsourcing. We are not relying on consultants, third parties. We do the work directly as legislated. Another thing to note on this particular slide, I think a key emphasis is that as a result only 27% of this allocation goes to a program that we can say is administrative in nature. And slide number 10 provides a further distribution of the expenditure per line items, per spending units, and also per economic classification. We can also see that COE 57 million for 2018-19 and 23 million for goods and services. When we look into key areas that I may provide further information, the commissioner's program is basically for the remuneration of commissioners and goods and services to allow them to conduct their responsibilities, all in all at 13.8 million. Chief Executive Officer spending, the budget that has been allocated, the 3.5 million includes remuneration for internal auditors and support staff within the spending unit. 3.5 and then 2.3 million on goods and services, which will basically be driven by necessary expenses like traveling to parliament and doing the core, I mean, the work that needs to be done in that particular office. Financial administration is remuneration for the entire finance and administration staff. Goods and services will include even expenditure relating to the audit. The audit by the AG has been budgeted to around 2.5 million for the year. So it's a bigger component of that 4.6 million. And another, we've got departments indicated, we've got communication there, but for provinces, just to highlight, for provinces, those are compensation for officials who are at the coalface of service delivery. In a typical provincial department that will be having linked to core work, legal officers will be residing in a provincial office. The outreach and education and public education officers will be residing there. So effectively, the nine provinces budget hovers around 2.4, 2.5 million. And they are effectively much more comparable in terms of size, in terms of how much resourcing has been allocated. What you can also note in this particular slide is the allocation to research. Research unit is comprised of a number of officials, up to nine officials, and they are all residing in head office. That is why the budget appears to be bigger compared to other line functions, because for other line functions like legal, the officers are located in provinces, but for research department, the officers are centralized at their office. So, further to that, going to the right of this particular slide, basically projections, annual projections for budget into the outer years of the LTF. And they're increasing marginally, modestly, by around 5.5% per annum, where the base line is 80.7 for 2018-19. And on slide 11, an aggregated line item budget, also indicating that for the up-and-coming financial year, 57 million is COE. We have travel and accommodation being, if you go down the third last line, travel and accommodation overall for the entity at 6 million. Our emphasis is that we are also operating across the corners of the country. We are present in every other province, and then we do travel to communities. So travel will be one of the key expenditure line items. Also looking into this, telecommunication expenses, we run 10 offices and then we rely on telecommunications, and as well we have all intentions to use technology. The internet drives, uses data is telecommunication related, and we, despite the planning and budgeting space constraint. We also have got budgets for training and development. The AGI presentation indicated that one of the key focus would be to utilize, to ensure that there's of an additional competence. And then that competence will by and large depend on the competence and skills levels of our respective officials within the institution. So another line that I can provide further information is professional services. In there we are including 2.5 million rand for audit fees by the AG for the up and coming financial year. And further to what has been budgeted under professional services would be for legal expenses. There are instances in which we would need to litigate through third parties, through law firms, not really directly relying on our own. So effectively, that's where we are. Maybe the last material budget line is for office cleaning, maintenance, plant and security at 2 million. Under that line is all for municipal services expenses and office maintenance related expenses budgeted for the 10 premises at 3 million for the year. And the budget itself, one can see that it's really under pressure, very tight. And going along on slide 12, it's, from slide 12, budget figures are indicated per strategic objective. The first strategic objective is the one that focuses on the enabling legislative environment. And there are three sub-strategies indicated, narrated on the left-hand side of the document. And basically, this slide indicates the distribution of the budget according to those particular lines and according to economic classifications. And there are sub-bullet notes. Chairperson, if you allow me, I'm not going to spare time and not go through them in detail. Slide 13, as it were, in terms of the framework for strategic planning and execution, we are required to also do risk management. PFMA requires that. There's a specific provision on the PFMA that imposes on institutions to employ a system of risk management in planning and also in managing the activities of the entity. So we have done that. Against the strategic document that we have derived, we have looked into areas of risk. The most obvious one is the budgetary constraints indicated therein. So we, in this plan, we try to mitigate. I think we have also factored in cost containment plans and intentions, and as well, I mean, to ensure that we stay afloat, we have not ruled out the possibilities of relying on fundraising, but as well as was emphasized in the previous presentation, the issue of collaboration. I think smart partnering with like-minded institutions to ensure that the gender equality agenda is rolled out, is shortcut in the approach of managing the plan, ensuring the success in the execution of the plan. The issue around amalgamation, I think, will always be an issue that threatens our ability to effectively deliver on what we have planned. In the space that we are operating, we have also noted in the previous presentation that there is an intention to revive and also stimulate the national gender machinery arrangement. So there's a codependency amongst between the CG and other stakeholders. So we would need to be observing that that could be a potential threat, but as well as a potential opportunity. Should we implement effectively our mitigating plans. Not going through all of them, I think what could also be taken away from the previous presentation was the intentions to institute knowledge management as a philosophy in doing business. So effectively the CD intends to have a comprehensive knowledge management strategy to be rolled out over time. However, we will be beginning to execute some of the functions, planning it into the new APT, and then designing a knowledge management system to ensure that the CGE becomes a repository of information, especially information pertaining to gender equality, and then so that the country can benefit, all the stakeholders can benefit and draw lessons from the information that the CGE over time accumulates. That's the intention. The second strategic objective is SO2, which focuses on the promotion for the respect and protection of gender equality, including development and attainment of gender equality. So, equally so, we have spread the budget according to those programs. Well, take away from this particular slide or even for this particular strategic objective is the fact that this is where most of the day-to-day activities by CG personnel is focused on. We're receiving complaints, we respond to them on a daily basis. We're meeting grassroots through our advocacy and education on a continuous basis. Legal clinics are conducted through focused on this particular sub-strategy. So day-to-day engagement of the legal our officers is saturated under this particular sub-strategy. And the allocated budgets are indicated in there. And associated risks, which risks, they are associated to the strategic objective, but they also cut across all the strategic, the entire operation. So that we have noted that because of limited resources, it's always difficult to reach the breadth and length of this of the country. Most of our provinces are rural. The terrains are difficult. An example would be we can take the Northern Cape as a typical province. It's a vast province. The population is vast. So those realities present challenges to the CGE. So, but it's also underpinned by the fact that we don't have sufficient budgeting. And the last one, which is of note, can be reputational risk. The gender equality subject is a difficult subject to discern and articulate. So we are highlighting this particular fact to say that there needs to be intense training internally within the CGE, but even amongst the other role players, decision makers, to understand the importance of gender equality. I can already think about a particular interest, a critical stakeholder, those who are engaged with amalgamation. I think as part of our responsibilities to manage this particular risk is that we need to focus and ensure that gender equality or the provisions of the Constitution are equally understood by all participants. The last sub-strategy, which is internally looking, basically comprised of the work that has been done by the commissioners, because commissioners, despite the fact that they also do the core work, they are also tasked to, as board members, they are tasked with fiduciary duties. So they do have managerial oversight responsibility. So their budget has been allocated to year, but we know that their involvement spills over to the core as well. So the figures allocated are indicated, and there are also allocations for financial management, specifically indicated human resource management, ICT, and the CEO's program are also indicated here. Takeaway from this particular slide is that the budget, which the component of this budget, which can be attributed to administration, only takes about 27% of the overall budget. We basically minimized, we avoided allocating or saturating the available funds on administrative activities, but for activities which are service delivery orientated in nature. And so it goes with associated risk chairperson. We one of the known, I think also driven by the fact that we don't have money, we are unable to recruit and retain good skills, but we are doing everything in our power to grow that particular capability internally. And the issue of governance, I think, are always relevant in a democratic developmental state as ours. So we will be focusing on ensuring that the oversight, effective oversight and accountability occurs as is required in terms of the law, but also in terms of good corporate governance. So we are focusing on that. We are not letting loose of the particular grid. And some other areas, because as well we intend utilizing ICT to execute, we rely on IT, we rely on IT inevitably, that is where the world is moving. This particular ICT governance is an area that we are focusing on. We are not going to also fail to comply with the requirements of the law, because there are also regulations and examples of the regulated compliance requirements. It's what's called the POPI Act, Protection of Personal Information Act. We endeavor to comply to ensure that we don't expose the CGE to legal consequences of non-compliance. And lastly, Chairperson, on the slide 8, it's effectively summarization of the essence of this presentation to say that we are presenting before the committee the five-year plan and the associated budget, and in parallel we are also presenting the 2018-19 APT-related budget, and we are also highlighting issues that we have as an institution, which issues, some of them we have covered under risk, but in addition, the issue of financial viability, we put it on record again to say that it's still a threat, a living threat, notwithstanding that particular living threat, the CGE has got plans to try and mitigate. And we put in for noting by the committee that we consider ourselves a going concern, so the plan is funded, albeit with limitations, but we will be able to execute the plan as put forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
I don't have any clarity in question, but I do have the questions here. CGE, the AG recommended that you should address the indicator related to the handling of complaints in the 2017-2018 annual report. That will be important for the committee to determine whether CGE has been able to address the matter. dealing with the backlogs of complaints has always been a challenge with the CGD. What measures have been put in place to address this over the next 5 years? The second question is, how are the commissioners contributing to achieve this target in dealing with the backlogs of complaints? The other question is, given the fiscal constraints and the response by National Treasury to the Committee 2017 BRRR report, what is the CGE's plan regarding moving from a manual to an electronic AK system as a means of increasing efficiency? And the last question is, do you have any plans that you have put in place to implement those targets that you have not been able to meet on the 2017 to 2018 financial year? Thank you, Chair.
The thing here will
am demanding input from the mayor because you undermine that. The problems that women are facing are actually related outside the
I'm looking forward to meeting the new minister. Present our report and our disappointment about the performance of the department, you know, today and previously. All the short 11 months that I've been in the committee, I really haven't had very, very positive input about the department. And I've just spoken to my colleague next to me, Upumzi, and talking to her about the correction measures. In regard to this challenge that we have in the committee. And you know, what she tells me is hope, in the sense that we will have an opportunity to interact and engage with the minister. But we will actually present all our frustrations. And maybe we take this from there. Thank you, Chair.
Other members?
Chair, thank you. What's wrong with my system? I'll just keep my finger on the button. I just want to say this isn't questioning the CGE. I think they've given us good facts. But just in relation to what was mentioned by our colleague, would like to know whether the minister, the new minister, has been invited, or do they in fact just come automatically? Because I think we would like to have the presence of our ministers. The previous lady has not been around, and I'd just like to know if this has been followed up at all.
For next week, the 2nd of May. It's going to be on Wednesday, because on Tuesday, the 1st of May is the holiday. So we cannot meet on that day. But we've got approval to meet on the 2nd of May. But also, that's what depends on that we invited them to present their APP, because it's the time of the presenting APP. That's also, we meet with them only if they have tabled. They are APC as president of parliament. Up until now, they haven't tabled. So I'm hoping by this week they would have tabled. If they have not, then I will advise them. Because in terms of procedurally, as a committee, we cannot engage with them until they have tabled parliament. And then the office of the speaker will then defend. affairs to the committee, like this, that the APP of the CGE has been tabled to Parliament and is referred to committee for consideration and support. That's what we're doing right now. But by that time, then it has been. But I'll make a follow-up in the office. Thank you. Another thing is, I just want to let the member know that the debate, budget vote debate, is on the 17th of May, so they have to say, because we don't have time, we need to, as a committee, combine and adopt our report before the budget vote. We need a parliamentary process 5 days before the day of the budget vote, which is on the 17th. Thank you, member.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out, is there no deadline for the tabling at Parliament? Is it wasn't the deadline, isn't the deadline expired?
Deadline was on, I think,
30th
of March.
So can I just follow up, Chair? So if you miss the deadline, what happens thereafter? Is there no...
What I know and see is that if entities of department have not tabled on time, they normally write to the speaker and explain, and that letter will be a ticket for public and members of parliament to understand. So that's as far as my knowledge goes.
I wanted to intervene to say now we are dealing with the presentation from the CGE. Let's interact with that. Then your departmental matters will deal with them after that. You know, so that was my input then, Chair.
But
I can understand even now, I'm lost, Chair. But back on the agenda. Just two questions, just two comments, Chair, or questions in terms of the presentation for the CGE. But just to appreciate Chair and the CEO for the work that you are doing, and we are proud of you. You can hear the challenges as the Botswana Committee with regard to our work and our oversight that we are doing with regard to the department. But more or less, I just want to comment on the two programs that you'll be focusing on this year, 18-19, your shelters, public hearings on your shelters, because I know there are challenges there, and your women in correctional services. I'll have interest in the two. And Chair, I'm not quite sure with regard to the transformation in the universities. This you have been doing this previously, and I'm not quite sure how which universities are you going to focus in this coming year, and your women in procurement. What will be your focus? Are you going to focus on your public sector, being your government departments, or your private sectors, your private sector? And with regard to your traditional sector, your focus on the traditional sector, I think there's a traditional cost base, which is before the personal committee on COFDA now. Any comments on that, or are you going to make formal inputs directly to the portfolio committee on COFDA? And with regard to your preparation for the national elections, what is it that is different that you are going to do this year? Remember, you've been doing it for quite some time, and there's a little, you know, change with regard to women's representation. Obviously, you know that the ruling party will comply to the gender equality as it's in their constitution. But with regard to other parties, how are you going to hold them accountable? You have been doing it for quite some time. You have been struggling in terms of gender equality. The country is going down. What is it that you want to do this year? What is it that is new that you want to focus on this year? And with regard to the presentation made by the CFO, I see in page 10 there's a line item in terms of your economic classification. There's an item on your public information, public education and information support, which is budgeted for 2017, and your public education and information, which is that third, which is budgeted for 1.7 million. Just clarification on that. The professional services are covered. Yeah.
Chair, I just want to follow up on something that my colleague has said. I'm also very pleased to see that there's going to be a focus on the shelters movement. And I personally have got involved with the National Shelters Movement, and I think it is something that's really valuable. I was wondering whether there's opportunity that we could have them to address us and to tell us what is happening, because I think it is of wider interest to the whole committee. And then the traditional courts bill is something that particularly interests me from the point of view of widows. I think I had mentioned this before in this committee, that the plight of women and widows in particular is something that troubles me, in the way that they are often dispossessed of property or wherever they have been living, and I think this is something I would like more information from. And perhaps in our committee, if there could be more linking up and securing of invitations from other committees, for example, like COPTA is dealing with the traditional courts bill, but there's a very important element in women, and I think we need to follow up and make sure that we can give the input as well. Thank you.
Thanks. I heard that in one of their focus will be to review if making an amendment to the National Gender Policy Framework. I just wanted the timeline. When do you intend to doing that? And Chair, I'm also interested, you know, your Employment Equity Commission report of 2016-17 indicates that we're still having, you know, unequal representations with regard to gender equality. And one of the highlights that I'm having is that, you know, in terms of top management, we have 28% of men as compared to 22% of men. So, you know, I want CGE to zoom in that space. We must occupy that space. I know in government we are not doing well. Private sector, yes, is something else, but in government we are not doing well. How are we going to zoom in that aspect, SCGE, and which departments can you then prioritize in that matter?
Thank you, Chair.
I would also like to add on what Honorable Tego has said on the issue of the presentation of members in Parliament, but concentrating on the issue of the representation of politicians with special needs or disabled politicians to Parliament, especially from the opposition. Because what we have seen is that the only members of Parliament, of members with disabilities in Parliament, are coming from the ruling party. But all these opposition parties, they don't even have one. Whether they don't have any politicians that are disabled in their political parties, what are they doing for the representation of them? Or they are just forget about them or whatever. But we want the CGE to assist us to this, to this coming general election. How are you going to make sure that this opposition party bring members with special needs to Parliament instead of forgetting about them? Instead, they want their votes rather than the presentation of them to Parliament. Because even now, as a ruling party, we have seen that there is a decrease of the number of members with special needs in Parliament.
And
also, how are you engaging with the ruling party on this issue? Thank you, Chair.
Bearing in mind that with the ruling party, we've lost. And we actually put up now don't replace with the
able
party. We want replacement of those who died and they belong to the special needs group.
Thank you. I'd just like to give input that this is something that I have personally been very involved with, and also within my own party. Because when we talk about representation, I always say it's not only colour, it's not only gender, it is people with disabilities too. But then we... we are on the search, but we've also got to get the electoral representation to have more. But it's my personal mission. It has been raised many times, but we'll see what happens in the future.
Been involved with a very In the black touch, you remember? Yeah. One good example with CGE. Right now, everybody is fighting the rush of killing people. Okay. Your organization has never, ever had a person like that. Neither on the wheelchair assistant. And it's about time. It was saying we're working for the South African people. Irrespective of your of the party you are. Yes, we differ. We are actually deployed by our constituents. You actually, the people who want to join you, have to apply. And it's a very learned thing. But at the back of your mind, I'm talking to you now as a lecturer. Do you think that we just that's why we don't have to argue.
I want to just agree to you on that, but I'm glad you raised the matter of elderism. Again, this is a personal issue that I've been for some years. Albinism is something that I have been pursuing for some years, and in fact I was one of the first to put through a motion in Parliament in the early days that we had to give representation. One of our commissioners, Nomasonto Mazibuko, was in fact somebody who approached me, and we were trying, and this was in a previous ministry, trying to have an appointment with the portfolio committee and with the others. It never happened, but I am interacting at the moment with some people in Johannesburg, and they would also like to make a presentation to this committee so that we can bring it forward, because they skulk in the shadows, very often because of fear, but also just feeling that the glass ceiling is all over. So I'd like to put that on record. If we can include that in our program, I would be very happy, and I can give you contact people too who are ready to come and talk.
I would ask you to get people from Western Cape. We are now actually asking what the Western Cape DA is around those areas. Of course. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable members, for the question. I'm going to start with the financial one. I think can you respond to honourable question? Then we'll come back to the substantive, the gender substantive issue.
Okay, thank you, Chair. The question relating to the split under slide number 10, there's a budget indicated for TI support. Basically, it relates to remuneration and related administrative expenses on one person who supports, who basically functions as an interface between the TI function in her office and all the other provinces. So effectively at the national office, yes. So it is an administrative position, but by and large is focused on coordination of the TI activities. So that's a history to that. We have a standing chart of accounts, and in that particular chart of accounts we met individuals, headcounts to a particular chart of account. And then historically, the support was in the office of the chief operating officer. So we have just renamed it because we have collapsed the COO position. So the functionary therein remain, but has now assumed the coordination role, administrative coordination role. So it is valid, it is separated, but the separation is informed by the history of chart of accounts making. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
I'll start with the Honourable Bengu, some of the questions that she has put forward. Yes, in the last audit, the previous financial year's audit, there were specific findings on the APP as far as targets were concerned. But what we did was we were able to change them. The auditors will come now in May, and because when they finalize the previous year, we are already in the new year. So what we did last year around this time was to take into account the findings that they had highlighted as far as our legal work and some of the targets were concerned, and we were able to then put a resolution before plenary for us to then change and adapt to ensure that in this current financial year that has just ended, that we are going to be audited on, that those particular matters are not an issue anymore. So we've done those particular changes as far as the audit process of that other year, 16-17, was concerned, and that has been done. As far as the budget constraints and looking into a case management system, I think sometimes, as much as we complain, sometimes it assists us whenever we have vacancies. If members will remember, in the previous financial year, we had quite a number of vacancies. I mean, we didn't have, I mean, our chair, for instance, was only appointed on the 1st of November, and so were other commissioners. So there was a little bit of money that we had accumulated as far as those positions are concerned, because remember at the beginning of the financial year we are expected, because of the structure, to fund them, and those little monies that we were able to get, those savings, we were able to then highlight specific projects that the money can assist us for, and one of those processes was the case management system, and the case management system will be rolling out in this current financial year. And money was utilized from there. Honourable Sake, as far as the shelters and members of correctional services are concerned, I think it has been a concern as well with the Commission. There have been quite a number of complaints, for instance, that we dealt with on shelters. And we also checked around and we saw that even, you know, some of the people, as far as shelters were concerned, we found that even institutions such as Human Rights Commission have been also like preparing. I mean, they get matters that they also refer to us for us to look into. And so that area is problematic. So the idea for us is to engage. We have already actually had a preliminary meeting with some of the people that are running these shelters. So we will be engaging with them. We want a process where we are able to call them so that we document exactly what the issues are. We are looking into legislation. There is legislation that is in place. And question is whether that current legislation as it stands, is it assisting or helpful as far as the women that are abused or the victims of abuse that then get into these particular shelters. So it's going to be us looking into social development, engaging in terms of how they are administering the act, looking into the actual shelters and talking to the specific people that are running these shelters, because we know we've seen that there are problems, and then seeing if ever there's a need, then out of that report will then highlight, say, what are the kind of things that perhaps as a country we should be putting in place and what it is that we should be looking into. So that's exactly what the report will be about. As far as I know that the chair will talk much more eminently on elections, but I mean, there's quite a lot of work that we have done as far as this is concerned. We have had quite a number of submissions that I hope this committee is also aware of, and as we are elevating the issue of the national gender policy framework, we are also hoping that we will be supported as we think about issues around 50-50, because the only way, Commissioner Zeke, I think from my perspective, leaving the political, my political head to talk further on that, but from where we are standing as officials, I think it's going to be important that we legislate the issue of 50-50, because in as much as we, as much as we have even voluntary policies in some of the political parties, we should have something that actually enforces and ensures that they are followed. And so that's one of the things that, that we will be looking into. And when we have done submissions before as far as TCB is concerned, and we are looking into it. We continue just to follow the development as far as that, that bill is concerned. And even more so now that there are sections in that in the TCB that actually give us a specific responsibility, for instance, as the CGE. And so it's important that we still engage. I think it's informal. We were not in support of TCB as it stood at a particular point in time, and so we will still we still are running a program where we are running submissions with on relevant bills that come before Parliament, and that one is still going to be a part of it, and will be looking into it.
Just to respond to one question by Honourable Dengue, where you were asking what, how our commissioners are assisting in the legal problem, and in particular this was the legal one. Now, when the CEO was making her presentation on page 3, she got those at committee. Now, besides plenary, where we meet 4 times a year, when there is a need, we have, for good governance purposes, we have established committees. And these committees go in according to the departments that we have in the CGE. For instance, the one in particular on legal complaints would fall under the legal and complaints committee. So all those committees are chaired by commissioners. So the chairperson of that particular committee picks up all the problem areas and are discussed in that committee, and then recommendations are forwarded to plenary.
Thank you very much to the honourable members. The Correctional Services program is a research program that we are doing, and I also wanted to just elaborate on the legal work that we do. So what we do with the police and employment equity, we're using our legal powers. So whoever comes and appears is invited using our legal powers, and the recommendation together with the private sector or public sector or universities, whatever we recommend for them to do, they will have to do it. So I'm also positive about how they have responded, that many, even ESCOM was at some point not having enough women engineers, but when they appeared in front of the Gender Commission, we actually gave them the pointers on what they needed to do, and they came back. They are one of the flagships now with women employees. The challenging public sector, I think, is the police. The police, women police officers, the ones that visit our homes when there is a break-in, that is where women are sitting in the police service. Warrant, they are called warrant officers. Mm-hmm. What we raised with the different police commissioners of that time, I think that we have to probably, as honorable, I think we're asking us what becomes of the recommendation. I think we need to go back to the police one. And maybe it comes back to you, honorable member, that this
the relationship of this portfolio committee with the other portfolio committees was, we do table our findings, our legal findings, and we do table our updated report on even the mining companies that we go and visit and say to them, improve here. They come back to the gender commission and say, if they need training or they want to institute a policy or we identify weaknesses, and then they incorporate and put the draft or a policy adopted by their board to the gender commission, and then we monitor. So there are success stories, I think, that we should be putting them. That's why we said there are times when we just are reporting to you in terms of the AG, but we want to report to you in terms of the gender substantive work that we do, because we owe you that much. And I think that when you ask us questions, it's like when we have to come and talk about our compliance, which restricts us from talking about the substantive issues that we are doing. So we, why the universities, they are outstanding universities. And even there, I want to also indicate that we have a Nelson Mandela University has not appeared in front of us. We have Mpumalanga University that has not appeared in front of us. We need them. Why we need them? That we caught Venda, and we have a sexual harassment case in Venda. Now we can actively say the VC that caused so much problems is gone. And it's because they work directly now with the Gender Commission on what to improve. I know TUT has improved their gender profile, and it's because they came to appear in front of the Gender Commission. UCT Gender Commission, VET, has an anti-fraternal policy. It's the Gender Commission with them. So the work is carrying on. IEC, I know that they are tabling an amendment for a gender equality clause as part of the election. I know that it was tabled in a multi-caucus, multi-party caucus. I don't know whether you have adopted it, but I know that the parties were resisting that clause, the debate. So it's up to Parliament to actually get that going. So we do have a legislative amendment that we have tabled to yourself. So to the Honourable Member that was asking, how much have you done as this committee, the Gender Commission, that is why we are here. As much as we are having difficulties, but I think your support, you have been directing us, you have been questioning us, you have been wanting us to improve even financially. This is where we have come. I also want to say there's a breakthrough with the media. If you have found more with media, our media work, it's them now who raise the gender questions, not us. I know they were sitting on the neck of DA after your election in Congress. Yeah. And they were, you know, the media was headstrong on why, you know, doing the transformation. So that's what was happening. So I think that as much as the Gender Commission cannot be everywhere, but we have had a reception from the media. 702 works directly with the commission. They send their complaints directly to the Gender Commission, and we respond to them. Even their listeners, they respond to them to tell them that we did get the service that we needed. And SABC, invaluable. I must say, Swedish Embassy is funding our community radio. Remember, community radio is an NGO that needs money for you to actually work with them. But the Swedish Embassy has actually funded that work for us to work with the local radio station. That work is invaluable because we can go to Josie FM, we reach so many more people. So I think that the partnership thing, we're just strengthening it. I want to formally table, Honourable Member, that we have been reporting the freezing of conditions. It's been years now. Mm-hmm. It's been 3 years. So we have a new strategy, and if you see, part of it is that we have a business model. Remember, we don't have a COO. We have downgraded the HOD for HR and made it a lower position
because we're trying to put savings into the system. So we would want, maybe with time, Honorable Chair, for the Gender Commission to actually bring now, because it is raised in our financial the audit. If you can see there's a high, or they will talk about vacancy rate and what. And from our side as the committee, we know why we are not filling in those positions, because there's no money, and we have actually indicated that we have lowered some of the positions, but we would like to table formally what is happening in the organization. And also as a role of commissioners, other commissioners are actually here in Western Cape now doing our oversight work. Another one is in Limpopo. What we do, we're looking at how to effectively turn around the institution to respond, to be more responsive. I think you members went out and you saw some weaknesses into our system and our offices. So we're working on that. And it means that some of the positions, we had to advertise the legal. We were short of legal. We have three positions in our legal. Well, we need to strengthen and bring back a bit of a deputy director into the legal, because if you see at our strategy, we are now focusing more on what the legal should be doing for the country. And just to also say, in terms of our legal, we are reworking our key performance area. We need our legal officers to register complaints, to direct complaints that need mediation, to direct complaints that they just sit around with people and sort out problems. Because we do these things, but we don't itemize them. Where people are always waiting for, when are you closing the case? And sometimes the case comes and the two parties agree on what needs to be done through mediation, and the case can be closed around there. So I think that we are introducing, we are copying a bit of CCMA in terms of coming up closer to our mediation work as per the Act. We want to be more focused on what is resolved, what is needed on mediation, and what is it that we have transferred. So you'll see more when we report the substantive work that we do. So it's our the National Gender Framework. We are interested in the Women's Ministry. Remember, we also have to do with an oversight on the Women's Ministry. And I think that I appreciate your strong sentiment on the Women's Ministry. And hopefully that what we have seen from our side with the new minister was that there seems to be some appetite for gender work and women's rights work. And probably things will turn around a bit, hopefully. I'm hopeful, but I know that operationally there have been problems there. But I see that they have advertised for a DG. Some people are, last week, Sunday Times has a DG position for women's ministry. They've been waiting for some time now to do that. So I'm hopeful that they will improve. The National Gender Framework, do you remember the Women's Ministry said they wanted to rework the National Gender Framework? There are two things that they said right at the beginning was that they wanted to look at the National Gender Framework, they wanted to look at the gender-based violence coordination work. Those two still infants, I don't know where they have left at the moment. But what this impact does, people call the Gender Commission now to come and train them. So we have to go to the government department to do gender training. We have to go to the provincial gender machinery to do training. We have to do what the gender framework was asking for different companies and parties to do. And we don't have that budget. So that's why it's in our interest to look at the National Gender Framework, because the Women's Ministry is not needed. So we will continue, and thank you very much. We will also try and focus more, but there is so much demand. People want us to react and respond now, and we kind of hamstrung, but
we are improving our relations with the HOC on sexual violence cases, and we are working with them on the early forced marriages. We have gone, I must update you, that we have gone to the judiciary and we raised with the Deputy Chief Justice that we were worried what is happening inside court. We are hearing judicial officers actually trying to minimize this and say to if a child, even if the child is rated 13, if that child was already having sex, then the offender can actually ask for a minimum, for the deviation on the minimum sentence. So the Deputy Chief Justice wanted us to write, but we said to them, we're just asking for moral suasion that the judges and magistrates are more sensitive to prejudice that is happening inside their courts. We would like to see their judges also hinting on issues of prejudice, sexism, and chauvinism inside their courts, because few judges actually talk. If you look at the Lamleti case, the judge there does infer that there were issues of discrimination or gender discrimination or race discrimination. So we want to encourage more judges to actually have a line on their judgment that speaks on a prejudicial implication that has been used by an attorney inside their court or everything. And we have agreed that with the Magistrate Commission and the Deputy Chief Justice that they will look at this. We are also training, part of the training courses. We are helping with the judges to develop a training course on gender-sensitive material. Of course, the judges don't want to be influenced by the gender commission, but that's the substantive work that we are doing. And the department also are responding, Honorable Second. They are departments that were very low in numbers. They come back to the gender commission and they will ask how do we do this, and we go and do their training. But we also now, I think Gauteng one is the premier, has part of their KPA, the agency, is to have make sure that gender transformation takes place in the department. So it's part of our recommendation to the department. Some of the municipalities have also put that in. The DA. The DA is not so not progressive. Let me disappoint the house. The DA and the municipalities, you remember, they have more women who are in the war. In the war. Yes. So I think that it's something that we can exchange with them, but the concern remains where there is strong, where the leadership, political leadership, like MMC, provincial structures, like they did now, was to say, we are responding to your leadership question. Then they took women's section. There's a women's section. Dawn. They put the Dawn woman in as part of the office barrage or something. But the media was very strict from saying, no, this is Dawn. We want the directly elected person. Then DA responded by electing another woman in their structure. Yeah, the NEC, I think their NEC decided, okay, we're going to put the woman who's in public. Yes. But it's a problem. But I mean, for me, it's like, DA responds, but very slowly. I think that we need more impetus from women in DA. Yes, I do. But so, with the ANC, I must say, we find relationships very conflictual. They shout us down sometimes, kick us out. But when they wake up, they appoint women. So, then the commission, they cut our heads. But then they implement what we are recommending. Yeah. So we are progressing. We are progressing, but it's slow, it's stymied, maybe we need to pick up a bit, maybe with a strong women's ministry to do the oversight on departments, it will actually help what the Gender Commission is doing, because some of the work that we do, we have to table it to them to say, run with it now, you are the implementers. Mm-hmm. But because of capacity constraints within the women's ministry, then things are stagnant. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to make a couple of comments about the shelter movement. I told you I was involved with that. We recently had a booklet published on the shelters in Limpopo and Mpumalanga, and that funding has been done by the EU. And those are the two at the moment that have been worked on. They're starting on another one. The biggest problem with the shelters is lack of funding, again. And it tends to be mainly with NGOs, but more money is needed from government in order to supply them. For example, if I think of Saki Bartman, it's one of the few, and that's in Aslo, where they allow women and children. Other shelters separate the mothers and the children because they say they don't have enough funding for the children as well, which is a dreadful situation, because then you've got families that want to stay together being separated, and sometimes those children go into foster care, which causes problems. And Saki Bartman actually does private fundraising as well, and I've been involved with that to try and make more money available so mothers and children can stay together. But those are the big problems. We need more funding from social development for that sort of thing. I won't go into other details. Again, I've got also good Swedish connections who help me with my private work, which is also political. But I just want to say that if we've got to take up this issue of the amalgamation of the CGE with human rights, we need to be fully equipped so that we can take on the battle. Now, I think you did give us a document some time ago about it, but is there an update on it, so that we can be fully briefed as a committee to take on this fight? I'm not sure. I may have forgotten about anything more recent, but please remind me.
We are taking a check, and we will send the, we will refund the Gender Commission petition. If there are the developments that we have to look at the risk of taking such a decision of combining different bodies that are already having financial burdens and obligations.
Thank you very much. Let's continue fighting for the rights. And I'm not going to be selfish because I have to be before they go to the house, because I think we're going to finish up around about 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. 7 p.m.